Okay. We'll tap to pause. Okay. Just looking at my podcast, it's Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. This is episode 12. I'm New York Mike. And happy Groundhog Day, everybody. That's right. It's Groundhog Day. So let's talk about Groundhog Day a little bit before we start in earnest in the podcast. Got a lot to talk about today, by the way. Tons of stuff going on, man. The world is crazy, changing so fast, so much. I mean, there's so much going on. But let's talk about Groundhog Day a minute, because I was thinking about it coming in. You know, Groundhog Day, I've been around a long time, and Groundhog Day, it was always about, what is it, Puxatawny Pete or Puxatawny Phil, which is the groundhog in Puxatawny, Pennsylvania, some town, someplace in Pennsylvania, where they take the groundhog, they put it out, and if Puxatawny Phil, I think it's Puxatawny Phil, sees his shadow, then you get 6 more weeks of winter. If he doesn't see his shadow, you get 2 more weeks of winter. Or the reverse. Maybe if he does, I don't know. But either way, it depends on what this Puxatawny little groundhog dude does, whether we have 6 more weeks of winter or 2 more weeks of winter. So that's the way it is. And it's always been a big day in America, man. I mean, it's like, you know, Groundhog Day. So here's the thing, though. They made a movie. And the movie, I don't know, in the 80s, and it was called Groundhog Day. So what was the movie about? The movie was about, it was a comedy, and it was about a guy that does something over again and over and over and over again. So what happened? One movie, right? One movie, and all of a sudden Groundhog Day takes on a new meaning. After, I don't know how many years, maybe a century, I don't know, of Groundhog Day being all about the groundhog seeing his, or not seeing his shadow, to doing the same thing over and over and over again. I don't know. It's Groundhog Day, but it just shows you how the culture changes on a dime. Just like that, one movie, and Groundhog Day takes on a brand new meaning. I'll bet you there are people you could talk to about Groundhog Day have no idea it's about Puxatawny Phil or whoever the groundhog is. I mean, that's this culture that we live in. Things happen, and boom, they just change, and it changes the culture. I don't know how long, forever? And in some cases, that's what happens. I don't know how long forever is. A couple of generations, maybe one generation, 2, 3, whatever it is. Groundhog Day has definitely changed. I got to add this. I don't want to bring anything down, but I think it's important. February 2nd of 13, we lost 2 American heroes, Chris Kyle and Chad Littlefield. Were shot to death by a guy who they were trying to help out. You know, it was a friend, the guy that was going through PTSD. And if anybody knows anything about Chris Kyle, aside from the fact that he's the American sniper and was just an amazing hero, they made the movie about him, wrote the book about him. I can't say enough about Chris Kyle as a human being and a Navy SEAL and just his amazing exploits, and Chad Littlefield. I mean, these guys, so many veterans give back to the veteran community, helping out vets, trying to prevent the 22 suicides a day that, you know, over and over and over. You talk about Groundhog Day over and over and over again. We keep on doing the same thing. Veterans keep on just going through this, and no matter what we do and how much we talk about it, it's just not enough. We're not stopping these suicides. As a matter of fact, suicide is becoming a major issue because of COVID. because everything is so close and kids can't go to school. And I don't want to get off on a tangent. I was going someplace else, but I think it's important that, you know, forever on Groundhog Day, I'm going to think about Chris Kyle and Chad Littlefield, because, you know, they say if you say their name, as long as you say their name, they're alive in some. We keep them alive. We keep their name alive, their memory alive. We keep them relevant, and I think that's important. There's certain names that I honestly, I repeat every day. I do. And Chris Kyle is one of them. Chris Kyle and Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty. And if you don't know who Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty are, they are the two former Navy SEALs that were killed in Benghazi when they came from the annex, and they didn't have to, and it wasn't their job, and they weren't, and they just did it. And they came over to help in that attack that was not an attack that was prompted spontaneously because of a video. It was an attack that was well planned in advance that we knew about. And Christopher Stevens, the ambassador, had asked for security and et cetera, et cetera. And again, I'm not going to get in the tangent. We've talked about that. But Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty and Ken Nocasia. Ken was a local San Diego kid, died, was killed in Afghanistan. He was with the 101st Airborne. That's the outfit that I served with in Vietnam. And it was also my first Patriot Guard ride. It was at the Rock Church. He had a funeral there, and I rode there with the Patriot Guard. It was back in 2010. I later found out his dad was a regular at San Diego Harley-Davidson. Great guy. I had no idea. Just happenstance that happened. But Ty Woods, Glenn Doherty, Ken Nocasia, J.J. Carroll. J.J. Carroll was a when I knew him, he was a lieutenant in Force Recon, Marines, Force Recon, that I trained with. Went to jump school with J.J. Carroll. Awesome dude, man. Lieutenant J.G. at the time. He was killed when he was a captain in Vietnam. I think it was in 65, September, if I remember right. He actually called an artillery in on his own position to save his men. And it's ironic. I believe he got the Navy Cross. I'm not sure. I know that people thought he should get the Medal of Honor. He was an amazing guy. J.J. Carroll was just, I don't, you know, again, if you didn't know him, you didn't know him. But if you knew him, you'd never forget him. That kind of an amazing human being. And he brought artillery in on his own, on himself to save his men. And he didn't get the Medal of Honor. The argument was, I kind of remember this, that he was wounded. And because there was extenuating circumstances, you know, he was already wounded, and so that somehow he didn't get the Medal of Honor. And I thought he should have, but a lot of people did. He was, and so later on, I looked up J.J. Carroll a few years back, and it just out of curiosity, you know, the guy was a, you know, it's one of those guys that, like I said, you never forget. He kind of touched everybody. And it said, and when you Google J.J. Carroll, that he was killed by friendly fire. Go figure. I mean, you know, it's somehow they're just, I don't know, J.J. Carroll and Ty Woods, Glenn Doherty, Ken Nocasia, J.J. Carroll. You know, guys that you just remember every day. And I just say those names, and there's a few other names, and, you know, Mark Lee, and it just, you know, it goes on. Mark Lee's was a Navy SEAL killed in August of 06. His mom, Deb Lee, keeps his name alive, does a great job. She speaks at events all the time, raises money for her foundation. You talk about veterans that do great things for veterans. Deb Lee does great things for veterans. And Yeah, you know, the list goes on, and I do repeat those names every day. So that's my Groundhog Day comment for the day. I don't think that my saying that is going to change the culture the way the movie did, but maybe people should think about it. Maybe people should revere those, you know, those who died, whether they died in battle or, you know, trying to do something to save fellow servicemen who were suffering from PTSD and PTS and different, you know, different things. With losing, like I said, 22 a day, it's just too many. And we've got to do whatever it's going to take. I got to tell you, as a society, we're in danger of discouraging people from, you know, be joining the military. It's a huge commitment. We take it for granted. We really do take it for granted. And we shouldn't. And I guess I could do a podcast every day just about the military and the politics of it all. Because I know that there's a lot of military podcasts. I don't know how many of them really, really, you know, just grab the politics of it by the throat and shake it. Because there's a lot of that. And somehow we ought to be able to, I don't want to say take the politics out of the military. It's going to be hard to do that. It's hard to take the politics out of anything. Politics affects us all. If they talk about politics and how it affects us all and everything that's going on with politics, imagine if they wrote a book. And they will. There's going to be books written about 2010, 2020, the year 2020. My God, I hope it gets better in 2021 and we don't have a second book or a book that goes, you know, 2020, 2021. Nobody would believe it, okay? Just the whole concept of what's going on. And you could, you know, I don't care where you want to start. You want to start with China. You want to start with the Wuhan, you know, thing where this COVID-19, where this China virus, Wuhan virus, China virus started in Wuhan, China. You want to talk about a mask culture, closing everything, social distance, sanitize, wash, 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 no travel. I mean, It's I don't know, corrupt elections. you want to go on that? How about the whole Marxist takeover of so much? It was a crazy year, and this crazy year with this unbelievable election. Which, okay, you know, I you got AOC and all these other Democrats saying if I talk about the election being corrupt and being stolen, you know, stop the steal. Is that inciting? It's inciting. I think it's inspiring people who think like me to stand up and do something so we don't have corrupt elections anymore. What is a corrupt election? Is it, you know, I can chapter and verse about what happened at the last election, in my opinion. But what were the things that allowed that to happen? Those are the things. I can't point to every little thing that happened. You know, stop the counting at you know, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night with Trump way ahead and start recounting at 5 in the morning and all of a sudden Biden's way ahead. Yeah, but what allowed it? What allowed it was election day. We have Groundhog Day is thankfully one day. Well, election day used to be, you know, the first Tuesday of November. And that was it. That's it. One day. Now, it's like a week. No, it's 2 weeks. No, you know, between the election and the counting of it's all changed. It used to be you had to go down, you had to register. If you weren't registered, you couldn't vote. And you registered in advance and you went in, you signed your name, showed your ID. Everything was so that on election day, you showed up. And everything you had, your ID and your signature, it all matched your registration. There was a system that was carefully put together to make sure there was no shenanigans and no fraud. And there still was. There's always, you know, somebody's voting twice, or somebody's, you know, voting with the identity of a dead person or whatever. That was, but not wholesale. Not like, you know, not like we had it. So we want to go back and inspire people, motivate people to say, enough's enough. This mail-in craze where everybody gets to just mail it in. And no, we're not going to have ballot harvesting. So we've got to work to change it. And what I'm trying to do, and I think millions of others are trying to do, is stop this eroding of all the things that make elections safe and solid and reliable, that we have the minimum of fraud and the minimum of corruption, which is going to slip and slide in every place in life. But the way this election was is really shameful. And so now you're going to say, because I said it, because Trump said that and felt that and was very emotional about it, because, you know, took it a little more personally. We should all take it personally, though, as Americans. But I get, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, he blew that amazing cool that he maintained for the 4 years that he was just constantly beat up, and he blew that cool. But now they're going to say he incited this whatever at the Capitol on January 6th. And I'm telling you, I've done the podcast about it. I was there. This was planned. This was pre-planned. The bombs were planted the night before. The pipe bombs, the Molotov cocktails, the whole thing. And these people were there while Trump was still speaking at the Ellipse Park, where I was. So there's no incitement, this whole thing. And AOC can sit there and say, all true. Oh, my life was threatened. Oh, I was so scared. I was so, you know what? Just stop. You want to be cool. Don't let them see you sweat. Don't just, you know, like, I don't know. It seems to be a little undignified. Not that there's as much, if anything, that is dignified about this woman, this congresswoman. But man, the way she's, you know, come on, step up. Ted Cruz, try to reach out. You guys ought to join hands, come together, show us the way that we can get together as a country. We can unify, because that's what Biden was talking about, but it's very far. It's a very far. It's the opposite of what he's doing. He's dividing the country even more than it was by not even giving, you know, anything to the idea of unity. Not even throwing it a bone, man. You know, meet with the Republicans on this 1.9 million. Well, let's see what he does. He met with them last night. Let's see what he does. Let's see how far he knocks it down. Maybe he'll be sensible and take out some of those things. I don't have a lot of hope, but no, I do have a lot of hope. I don't have a lot of strong belief that he will. But hey, you know. And then we've got this whole, I think I mentioned it before, this whole Marxist takeover. Well, yeah. So February, pick it up. Okay. So February, I forgot to put it on airplane mode. Oh my God, I messed up. Black History Month. And so I got to start off Black History Month talking about the Marxist takeover of America, that, you know, people like, you know, it's Bernie Sanders and AOC that disturb me a lot, but Black Lives Matter, BLM, that's what I got to look at on Black History Month. Look, I understand Black history, okay? It has meaning. It has meaning to me, as it should have to every American. Every ethnic group in this country has a history. Irish have history. Italians have history. My God, Jews. What an American story the Jews have to tell coming here in the 1800s when they were persecuted, coming here after my grandparents came here after World War I, after the Russian Revolution. You want to hear those incredible stories? And of course, the Jews that came here after the Holocaust. Just amazing. So, I don't know, do we have Jew History Week? I think I'd kind of like to, but we don't. But we have Black History Month, and I'm not complaining about it. But I am complaining about how Black Lives Matter are using this and perverting this to sell an idea. I mean, in the first place, Black Lives Matter, to me, is more of a terrorist organization that want to kill cops, do away with the budget for police everywhere. And, you know, they're attacking now in Portland, in New York, upstate. They're burning down buildings. This is not how I want to, as a person that grew up in a Black neighborhood with Black friends and Black enemies, you know, you grow up in a neighborhood, these are your friends, these are right. Well, who lives in that neighborhood? Well, Blacks here and Blacks there, and some of your closest friends and some of your deadliest enemies. But this isn't the history I want to make. I don't want to make history of trying to change America to a Marxist country, burning places down. It's just wrong. So I hope, for the sake of remembering the Martin Luther Kings and the it's just so many Black heroes, the Tuskegee Airmen, the 555th Airborne Brigade, the inventor of the red light, the red light, not the cameras, but you know, the red light, green light systems that we have all over the country, all over the world, really. So, you know, and there's so much others, George Washington Carver, and the list will go on and on and on. Those are the things that we should be celebrating and talking about, these great Americans, and there's so many more. I mean, it's not enough that are names that we're familiar with, and they're being overshadowed. Those names that should be put out there are being overshadowed by this BLM scourge, which is being foisted upon us as Americans, and it's really not helping the Black community. By the way, it's not Black. You know, these are more Bernie Sanders people than they are Black people. These are more Marxist people. These are more socialist Democrats than Democrats. And so it's not. I think we should take a long, hard look at the history that is being lived today. Okay? And is that the history we want to see? There are great Black leaders in this country today. Now, of course, I'll start off with guys like Tim Scott, you know, the senator from South Carolina, and you may start off with some. I get it, but nonetheless, they're Black, they're American, they're great people. They've achieved, you know, a tremendous amount of things in their lifetimes, and those are the things I think that we should be remembering when we talk about Black history, not in the future, not BLM. That's just the worst thing. You know, it's a crazy year, but this is Black History Month again. Would they believe it if somebody writes this book about 2020 and Black Lives Matter is being nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize? Go figure that one out. Black BLM, Black Lives Matter, the movement. And not that Black lives don't matter as individuals and as a reality. White lives matter. Every life matters. All lives matter. I get that. That's good. But the movement, BLM, Black Lives Matter, that's not a movement that deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, okay? And the fact that it's been nominated is just another anomaly of 2020, the year 2020, the book that they're going to write one day. And then Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican member of Congress, just elected, and the Democrats are trying to just cancel her. This cancel culture is just reaching down to anything because she has said some things. I don't even know what she said, and I'm not going to repeat what, you know, I read about because I think these people are nuts. She doesn't say anything close to what AOC or Ilhan Omar or some of these other people on the other side say from their side. And by the way, she was elected with 75% of the vote. So she was just elected someplace in southern Georgia. She just comes in. Yeah, she's ballsy and she's loud and proud and she's going to, you know, say what she thinks. And the other side doesn't like her. So what do? They try to cancel her. When did you ever see that happen? This is, I've just never seen this crazier year. Are the Democrats, do they want, would they, what would they say if the Republicans wanted to expel Maxine Waters? By the way, Maxine Waters, who said some hateful things, you know, about beating up or piling on the Republic, wherever you see them in the restaurants, you see them in the get, what's that all about? And what about Eric Swalwell, who had an affair with a Chinese spy for years? Okay, so they don't want to expel him. They won't even take him out of the intelligence committee. Are you kidding? What about the squad? The whole squad. All four of them or five of them or whatever they've grown to. The things that they've done. The taking on Israel. They're gonna boycott Israel. I mean, some of the other things that they've said about America, about me. I think it's racist to say that I have white privilege. Yeah, don't give me that. That's just a smack in the face to white people. And the fact that there's a lot of white people who are Democrats, obviously, and these liberal, but progressive, so to speak, progressive they call themselves, they're regressive. Because you don't attack any group, ethnic group, racial group, any group, and lay on them negative characteristics. White privilege is a connotation that we didn't earn. I didn't earn. My dad didn't earn. His parents didn't earn what they got in life, that they were born with some sort of privilege. Well, let me tell you something. My grandfather came here from Russia after the revolution on a boat, got off at Ellis Island, went through Ellis Island, went through the indignities of getting your name changed and going through this and going through that, spent a month on the Lower East Side of New York, got on a boat, went back to Russia, got his wife, my grandmother, and their then three kids, got on a boat and came back. Do you have any idea what that was like? I mean, yeah, listen, if I was going to listen to the stories of people coming up from Honduras, going through Guatemala, coming up through Mexico, I'm sure I'm going to hear some hardships. But then when they get to the border, are they coming across legally? Well, my grandfather did twice, and it wasn't an easy thing to do. It was demeaning, dehumanizing. Talk to people about Ellis Island. And that wasn't come on through, come on, welcome to America. Nope, that's not what it was at all. But he did it a second time. And by the way, got his name changed again. And so did his brothers, my uncles. He was my grandfather, so I never met my granduncles. But my uncle Eli, after my grandfather was killed in 1929. When did they get here? In 24? My dad was born in 24, so maybe 22. And they came here, maybe 21. And then in 29, my grandfather and my grandmother had this little restaurant place on Delancey Street. And he wouldn't pay the VIG, so he ended up dead. Yeah, at he was my dad was 5 years old. So there's an argument how old my grandfather was. I've been to the cemetery, it says he was 44, which ironically is how old my dad was when he died. Pay the big price. They pay the big price. White privilege, really? White privilege? Come on, man. This isn't right. Stop it. You can't be talking about this systemic racism. How about systemic anti-Semitism? Are we talk about that every day? By the way, yeah. And when you're writing the book about 2020, talk to me about this outlawing hate. Come on. You know, they're canceling everything. You think everything's just cancelable like that? You could just say, okay, that's not going to exist. It's just not going to exist. So we're going to cancel it. You don't cancel things. And you can't cancel an emotion. And you can't just stop the people's believing in things. Like, you know, the corrupt election. You can't. I'm not going to stop believing that and talking about that because you, the Democrats, say that. You can say it all you want. You're not going to cancel my thoughts, my feelings, and my beliefs. And the fact that I'm working hard, or the podcast and every other way, to overturn the corruption, overturn what led to the corruption, and make sure that we go back and bring back what we need. So we're going forward, and we have the total dilution, or even the cancellation of free speech. You're telling me we can't say any? There's nothing you can't say in America. And by the way, it's the speech that you hate the most that's the most important to protect. When I came back from Vietnam, and I remember going to the first demonstration, which I almost got to by accident, and I came upon it, and I'm listening to these guys denigrate me, the guys I served with, guys I watched dying and getting wounded and going through hell, and when in the hospital watching these guys suffering, and I'm coming back, and these guys are calling not just me, them names, and just putting us down like we're morons. And I stood there, and I got to say something. So I stood up, but the first thing I said was, "Yes, I hear what you're saying. I don't like it, but I fought, and I watched guys die defending your right to this, to say this, to protest, to have free speech. And we did. And that's what we did it for free speech. Not for a cancel culture, to cancel free speech." And what's, in, again, what I believe is, was the first thing that started, and it started, I don't know how many years ago, when 20 years ago, I started talking about hate crimes. And I was against it then, but I wasn't going to bring it up in a podcast or on my radio shows or anything. Now I see what it's led to. A hate crime. Because I said, no, it's not right. The crime is the crime. You rob a store, you rob a store. If you rob it because you got to, you know, feed your family, you love your children, you love your wife, you have no money, you have no job, whatever happened, whatever tragedy befell you, so you go out and rob the store? Is that a love crime? No. And so if you commit a crime and you rob a store, remember when Joe Biden said you have to be a Pakistani or an Indian or whatever he said to own a 7-Eleven or whatever? I mean, you know, what if you just hate those people and you rob their store? Is that a hate crime? No, you robbed the store. That's the crime. Now, I know that when this sentencing comes up, there's all kinds of stuff. But when you call it a hate crime, means that what you were thinking about at the time you committed it is what's, you can't, I just don't see how you can make thoughts a crime, let alone statements. So hate speech, if you don't like what somebody's saying, you're going to call it hate speech. The other side's going to call what I say hate speech, I'm going to call what they say hate speech. Oh, that's hate speech. You know, well, what about closing down the Keystone Pipeline? Well, that's hateful. It was an act of hatred. You hated those people. You took away their jobs. I don't know. I mean, think of some of the things that AOC says, that Ilhan Omar says, that some of those other squad members say. Hateful things. But I can't condemn them for having hate speech. I condemn what they say. And when we start doing that, we started on the path towards legislating what people can or cannot say. You label it hate speech, boom, you can make it into a crime. And that's just wrong. Now, when we talk about, by the way, the weird year that we're having, the strange year, 2020, just nuts. We got Biden's new State Department spokeswoman saying that the greatest threat to America is the police. The police. That's, I don't know. She said, and these are her words, more than ISIS, more than China or Iran, is the police genocide of black people. Are you kidding me? You know, I listened to, what's his name, Ernie Terrell. Is that his first name? Ernie Terrell, whatever. He was a Democrat. He's a civil rights lawyer, an activist, and he became a big Trump supporter. I don't know if I'd call him a Republican yet. I have no idea. But he's a big Trump supporter. And I was listening to him talk about it. And he's a black dude, and he's saying, 99% of those cops are there walking the street because they love us. They want to protect us. They want to take care of us. But there's 1%, and I think that's high, who are, I don't know what the word is, if they're, you know, maybe they're corrupt, maybe they're this. They're not, that whole 1% isn't racist. Just a few of them, of the 1%, but let's say 1% of everything is bad. So 1%, I'll go along with the 1%. Part of that 1% is what may, but most, you know, most, they've reviewed and looked at every one of these killings. And where did we get to? How did we get to a place where they can call the killing of criminals mostly genocide of any kind? Now, this George Floyd killing, the cop that put his knee on his throat, that cop's going to jail. Is the three guys with him are probably going to pay a big price. There's unjustifiable murders by police. There's no question about it. Mikey DiPaolo, 1957, maybe 58, I think it was 57. Mikey was 17 years old. He's one of the big guys on the block where I grew up. He was the Shell Bank guys. We went to Shell Bank Junior High School, then on to Sheepshead High School. Mikey was the leader of the pack. Cool dude, man. He once, Mikey was 17, I was probably 13. I once threw a bottle of beer at him. Me and Joey Kalika, oh my God. Threw that bottle of beer at him. It hit the ground. The glass cut his feet. They chased us. It was like 10 of the guys. We used to hang out with the older guys. They were great. But they chased us. Joey was just a little older than me. They grabbed him first, took him, stripped him in the middle of Nostrand Avenue. Then they grabbed me, and I was not going to let it happen. Mikey DiPaolo was the guy that happened to be grabbing, trying to pull the cuffs down on my pants, and I just kicked him right in the face. Well, me and him, he said, put him down. I stood up and we just went at it. And I don't think I got two punches in, and he got about 20. I went down. I came back up. He went down again. I came back up. beat the living daylights out of me. But that Christmas, that was the summertime when we used to drink beer in the park. That Christmas, I remember seeing Mikey. Christmas Eve was about 10:30. He was dressed in a suit and a tie and had a camel hair overcoat on, man. Just styling on his way to Midnight Mass. Well, after Midnight Mass, about 1:30 in the morning, on his way home, he stopped at a Bohack supermarket, went into the vestibule of the Bohacks, if you know what that, you know, well, not the vestibule inside, just, you know, by the doorway where the windows are, lit up a cigarette, and was shot 5 times by the cops because he was robbing Bohacks. So Mikey died about 2 weeks later in the hospital. Yeah, it was wrong. Don't tell me. Yeah, the guy was dressed when they, you know, when they brought him in. That beautiful suit with the yellow tie and the camel hair coat. And yeah, it happens. It happens all the time. It's not genocide. It's cops doing the wrong thing. It's cops gone bad. It's cops. You could say it's a lot of things. Sometimes it's just a mistake. But when it's a mistake that costs a life, well, of course, and they should pay the price. But to say we're going to defund the police, to say the police are all genocidal, that we should do away with the cops, that the biggest problem from the State Department spokeswoman, that the biggest threat to America is the police department, something's wrong. That something's wrong. I'll tell you something else that's wrong. Stacey Abrams being nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. But Stacey Abrams, you gotta give her the respect. I mean, like her, I may not agree with her, I may not agree with her policies. But what a sharp, polished adversary. You gotta respect what this woman did. Do I agree with or like, you know, the things that she did to corrupt the elections? Hell no. But what she was capable of doing in organizing her side and getting it past our side. It's like I always say, there's two parties in America. One's evil and one's stupid. That's just the way it is. So somebody did nominate somebody that I agree with, deserves the Nobel Peace Prize, really does. And that's Jared Kushner. Jared Kushner, and we all know who he is, I hope. That's Donald Trump's son-in-law. He's married to Ivanka Trump. He's the guy that led this whole peace process in the Middle East. He brought peace between the United Arab Emirates, the Sudan. I mean, 4 different Arab nations and Israel as a on the which is the pathway to Israel making peace with the Palestinians. He began that process by bringing that much peace to the Middle East. An amazing job. That guy deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. But here's a quote from the left, because Alan Dershowitz nominated Jared Kushner. So the quote, I don't mention the names of the people who make these quotes. You know, I'm not gonna name the killers of people, the murderers. I'm not gonna put their names out there to become famous. So some guy made this quote that Alan Dershowitz nominating Jared Kushner for the Nobel Peace Prize is like Hannibal Lecter nominating Jeffrey Dahmer for a Michelin star. I mean, come on, will ya? Why is it black and white? Why is it that you, no matter what we do, I'm not gonna sit here and agree that Stacey Abrams should be nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Certainly not Black Lives Matter. But I'm not gonna tear Stacey Abrams apart. Oh, Black Lives Matter, that's a different story. I've got something to say, and I think most people would agree with me. You know, people may not want to agree with me out loud because, you know, they're going to be intimidated and threatened. And by the way, if you live in those neighborhoods dominated by BLM gangs, you got a right to be. So, but Stacey Abrams, you know, I'm not going to sit here and make these kind of comments, nasty comments. That's just wrong. agree with it or don't agree with it. It's just crazy. So these are just the things I'm mentioning that I think is just bizarre about this year. So there's more bizarre stuff. Replace the federal fleet with all electric. Okay? You know, I gotta tell you, this guy Biden, I'm gonna tell you, I think he's a, I just think he's, what word can I use that's, I don't want to use the word idiot or moron. How can I say this in a way that's at least respectful of the office of the president, which I do respect, still, and always will. I don't care if it was Jimmy Carter or Obama. I respect the office. But this guy, what kind of come? He's a, this whole global climate change frenzy is nuts. Talk about being off the grid. But when you want to replace the federal fleet with electric vehicles, all electric vehicles, and you don't have the power to charge them, you don't have the power. Okay? You don't have any nuclear power plants that have been built in the last 30 years. 50%. Now, I think I've seen statements by the left wingers that say more, but 50%, the power to charge the electric vehicle, you know where it comes from? The power to charge these electric vehicles comes from coal. They say 50%, I've seen 90% of the power. You know, it comes from coal. Hello? We're not ready for this. We're far from ready for this. By the way, the other thing is the batteries, the lithium batteries. Guess where they're made? Yeah, China. Exactly. How dependent do you want to get? This year is crazy. 2020 coming into 2021 with this crazy. I what can I say about Biden in the way that's I don't know, I got to be very careful because I always want to respect the presidency. I find it hard right now with Joe Biden, but I don't want to be like the left was about Trump. That's not going to get us to where I want to get to. That's not going to get us to a place of unity. That's not going to get the United States to a place where we could stand up and defend ourselves against this Chinese threat. I don't know. But then again, you know, Twitter suspends Mike Lindell. That's the MyPillow guy. They're gonna cancel Lindell. You can't cancel Lindell. What are we gonna do about if we don't see a My Pillow commercial for pillows and blankets and pajamas or whatever else? What are we? Hey, wait a minute. Were we watching TV? I didn't see a My Pillow commercial. Can't cancel Mike Lindell. It's so stupid. But that they did cancel. They blocked the subpoenas for all the COVID-19 nursing home data that they were. You know, there were all these subpoenas that were issued by the Attorney General of New York State. Well, it has to be a black woman, and probably I'm sure she's a Democrat. So they block all the subpoenas. She put out all the subpoenas to get all this information about nursing home deaths caused by, according to a lot of people, and I believe it, Governor Cuomo. And the Democrats blocked those subpoenas. What are you doing? Why? All right, I got one more question about this 2020 year coming into 2021. Where's Hunter Biden? Where is he hiding in all this? I don't know. We got so much going on. We got this American rescue plan that Biden's putting out there. 1.9 trillion. Now the Republicans are talking about 600 billion is enough to target what's needed. So what is all in this 1.9 trillion? There's just so much here, but some of the things that stand out, and you know, just one of them. I mean, $350 billion going to state and local governments. If these state and local go, 170 billion for schools to reopen. These states are responsible for their own 170 and 350, 520 billion. That's almost as much as the whole 600 billion that the Republicans are talking about for state and local governments to open their schools and just straighten out the stupid mistakes that they've made during this pandemic time. Just those are Democrat states. Those are Democrat states. There's so much more. The $15 an hour minimum wage. Can't have a 15. You're going to kill millions of jobs. The government's telling you that. Your own OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, is telling you that. You're going to lose over 3 million jobs. And it's going to be jobs that's going to hurt. Well, you're going to lose tons of jobs because of how many of these illegal aliens is Joe Biden talking about bringing across the border. By the way, again, they come across the border. If you and I travel, we have to be isolated. We have to be, we have to go into whatever, you know, and be in a room by ourselves for 2 weeks or something to make sure that we don't have COVID and bring COVID. They're just coming across the border and there's no isolation. Nobody's testing. They're just coming through. It's just wrong. But that's what they want to do. That's what they want to do. They just want to bring all these people in. And then how many, you know, it's not fair to the immigrant that came through, that did it legally, that came through the border, went through the process, did whatever it took, spent the money, got his family. There's no difference between the immigrants that come here from South America, Latin America, Mexico, wherever, and come through honestly the right way, and how my grandparents came through, and how many millions and millions of immigrants have come through here, come to America over the last 200 years. There's no difference. You pay the same price. It's not easy. And then you're just gonna, you know, allow how many? 9 million, 11 million? Yeah, I know. In 1986, Reagan did that. I've always argued that, you know, Reagan was flawed in some ways that you've got to acknowledge. And one of them was the amnesty. I'm sorry, but that may have been what started this whole thing. And you got to call a spade a spade. Just because he's Saint Reagan doesn't mean he was perfect. He was far from it. You know, the 241 American Marines that were killed in Lebanon never, I don't think they were ever properly avenged. Just my opinion, and this and more. So we're just going to let these people come in, and what are they going to do? They're going to take the jobs from the immigrants who came here legally. They're going to take the jobs. You know, my dad, yeah, white privilege, my dad, after the war, drove a cab, worked in a luncheonette, and worked, took a, it was a flower, remember the flower deliveries, to deliver flowers in this panel truck on the weekends. Three jobs, and he went to school at night. Okay, so, you know, it's not easy. But now if all these illegals came in, they'd be, you know, they would take his job. They would do it for less money. They would just compete against it. It's like, wait a minute. He went through a war. These immigrants went through all the things that they had to do through that whole process, years of you know, becoming legally here and entitled to get a job and to work. And you're going to totally disrespect that? That's wrong. Lastly, I want to talk about China because it's the same thing, you know, except it's even worse. Because when we're talking about it this year, you know, here we had China on the run. We really did. Okay, COVID-19 came along. You know, they, however you want to say it, they certainly, you know, there was an edge there. But we were able to slowly bring the economy back. President Trump was trying to, he's not going to open up places in business in New York or California or wherever, or Florida. But the governors of those states, and he was doing his best to influence them. He always respected federalism. It's the governor of the states that run those states. So Governor DeSantis in Florida opened up Florida, and Florida is flourishing. They wouldn't do that in New York. They wouldn't do that in California. But we were starting to blunt that attack that China, the provoking, which included the China virus. Don't say it's, don't accuse them of making it happen. If they didn't make it happen, they certainly took advantage of it, and they certainly influenced the World Health Organization, not to tell us to cover it up, to lie. So I mean, come on. Everybody knows what went on. It's just that the Democrats don't want to acknowledge that it's a serious issue because Biden doesn't have the guts to take on China. So how close is are we with another, with a Democrat in office? How close are we to war? Or are we just going to let China overrun Taiwan, which is what they seem to be doing? They seem to be pushing hard. They would not have done this if Trump was, when Trump was in office, they didn't do this. Now we're seeing this whole world turn upside down and inside out. The Chinese are ascending warplanes, fighter planes, bombers into Taiwan airspace. They're doing it every day. Look what they're doing to Hong Kong now, pushing them. I see what they're doing with trade. Trump had them on the run. This Tony Blinken, our new Secretary of State, is now saying this is, what's hurting us is it's a self-inflicted wound that that we're suffering with, that we did it. No, China's doing it. It's not self-inflicted. They put Mike Pompeo, the Chinese put Mike Pompeo on a blacklist. I don't know. We gotta watch this. Let's take a look at this year hard, because it really is hard to believe that 2020 happened. When they write the book, it's going to be a book that, when you read it, if you read it like it's a novel, that it's fiction and just a story, you'd look at it and go, this couldn't happen. But it's not. It's nonfiction. It's when it's written, it's going to be history. Now, it may be distorted depending on who writes it. Or, let me put it this way, if a Democrat writes it, we'll call it distorted. If a Republican writes it, they'll call it distorted. You could just say that. We've got to change that. We've got to see the written word. We've got to see what's reported on the news. We've got to see it objectified. We've got to see it honest, objective. We got to see it just like it is. There's always going to be a little bit of a slant, but that's not what's going on. We have too much power going into too few hands. Hey, what I didn't get to talk about today, and I do want to talk about, and I will on Thursday, got to talk about more about this whole Reddit phenomenon, this the uprising of the average retail stock buyer on this Reddit. Internet group that just beat the living hell out of the hedge fund guys. Wow, that you talk about, if you talk about the little engine that could, man. If it can happen, we can overturn anything. That's the power of America. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on with that. It ain't all good. But let me tell you something. If you don't get Democrats like Sanders and the other Democrats that just want to regulate everything, if this doesn't give them the license to do that, we'll be okay. Because the beauty of this is that that's what the free market does. Sometimes it just gets out of control. And when you see, you know, retail people at that level go out there, the Reddit people, and beat up on the hedge fund people, there's hope for everybody in America. Hey, I'm New York Mike. This is Roll Right Radio. This is episode 12, Roll Right Radio. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being there. And we'll see you. If you're rolling right, you're rolling right along with us. Thanks for listening.